tell you about the S word in my house. I think everybody knows that Mandy is my daughter, Mandy Hogger. She has a sister named Jenny, who wrote all kinds of things on moving boxes at my house. One of the boxes said liquor, box number 174. One of the boxes said Dean's Prison Memories. So anyway, at my house, we had the S word. And generally speaking, it was Jenny who would use the S word and Mandy who would tattle on her. Well, it was one of those times when we had folks over for dinner and Mandy walked in and said, Jenny used the S word. Everybody in the building, everybody in the house got shocked look on their face. And Kim, ever more aware of what was going on than me, quickly interjected, you have to understand the S word at my house is shut up. So we're learning about a new S word and it's spelled snow. So don't y'all use that. I have to get Kim firmly rooted here before she finds out that it snows. Friday, Seth and Evan went with Emma over to Mark's fire station. Was it Saturday? Saturday. We went over. Was just Seth. Went with. Get this right. Went with Emma over to Mark's fire station. He was pretty impressed that Mark was a fireman and that they had this truck that was 80 feet long and it had two drivers and the back driver is called a tiller. He had to tell us all about that. Now I mention that because it reminds us as we think about Jesus and his mission and our focus that part of our life is spent in the workplace. Now, we're just not going to escape that. And as we think about Jesus and his mission and how that impacts our focus, we're going to have to think about how it impacts our behavior in the workplace. So we're going to do that today. I had a sermon all prepared, and I had it all put together, and I was practicing it last night. I found out that it was going to last about an hour and a half. So you don't have to worry. I cut it in half, and the second half will be tonight. So if you're worried, I should mention, if you're worried about the Super Bowl and the outcome, my grandsons played the Super Bowl on Madden 2020, and they have already determined that San Francisco wins by 10 points. So you don't need to worry about me going overtime tonight and missing the end of the game because San Francisco is going to win. So we're going to talk a little bit this morning about Jesus and his mission when he was here. What? You turn this on. We're going to talk about living our faith in the workplace. Now, before we can do that, we have to spend a little bit of time understanding Jesus' mission. When Jesus came here, Jesus spent about 30 years as a plain old carpenter. Now, that's what a recreation of a carpenter in the first century probably looked like. He's working at the workbench and you can see his son over there on the side. His son is learning how this carpenter behaves in the workplace, and that's what Jesus was. Jesus grew up as a carpenter's son and became a carpenter himself. We've already read that. Mark the 6th chapter. This idea of a carpenter is a person who is an artisan. or one who works with wood. Now, working with wood could be a lot of things. You could build real fancy things like this table or those pews, or you could get even fancier than that, and you could do fantastic woodwork like Dean does. You could build beautiful cabinets that do amazing things, or you could be just a plain old carpenter and you could build things like yokes for oxen. And sometimes we would have a tendency to think that if you're an artisan and you get to build tables or you build cabinets like Dean does, or you build beautiful pieces of woodwork, that that's more important than building just a yoke for oxen. But it's really not, especially if you ask the ox, because he's the guy that has to wear that thing. How many of you have ever portaged a canoe? You know what that is? You pick up the canoe and you put it on your shoulders because the river got too wild or it got too shallow, or for one reason or another, you have to pick up that canoe, can't paddle it anymore, you have to put it on your shoulders, walk it around in the spot that you can't get through, and put it back in the water, and then you can continue your journey. Now, the way that you do that is you have a yoke that's inside the canoe, and they're usually made out of wood. I don't know, not very many people have done that, but I can tell you from experience, if you get a yoke that's well made, you can pick up a 90-pound canoe and you can carry it for a long way. And if you get one that's just not very well made, you pick up 90 pounds and put it on your shoulders and you immediately want to put it back on the ground. So, when we say Jesus was a carpenter, he probably didn't build fancy doors or beautiful cabinet work. He was a carpenter in a provincial city. He probably, as a carpenter, made ox yokes. And he talked about that very often during the course of his personal ministry. So, Jesus, when we say he was a carpenter, he wasn't a fancy carpenter. He was a plain old carpenter. Now that's what Jesus did while he was here. According to some of the early writers, Chrysostom and others, the Lord probably made plows and ox yokes. And remember, they had wooden plows back then. This is before they had steel plows that like Abraham Lincoln said, you know, sometimes the plow just won't scour. If you don't build the plow right, it's just not going to work. But Jesus was a carpenter in a provincial village. He probably wasn't doing anything very spectacular. He chose to be the son of a carpenter. This was not something that was forced upon him. You know, sometimes we grow up and we become something just kind of by default. Many times it's not even what we really intended to be doing. My dad is a perfect example of that. He really didn't intend to be an accountant. But he grew up and he got a job as an accountant and lo and behold, wound up being a CPA. So sometimes we become something just kind of by chance. Jesus chose to be the son of a carpenter. Remember, he chose to be born to Mary, and that was Joseph's wife. So that's what Jesus chose. That's an understanding of Jesus' mission. Jesus never looked down on people who worked with their hands. Never once. Jesus never demeaned those people who had a job. There are a fortunate few people that are born into the world who don't have to have a job. Their parents were so rich that they have inherited marvelous wealth that they don't need to worry about a job. But Jesus grows up as a carpenter. In Mark, the 6th chapter, passage that we've already read, Jesus, during the second year of his personal ministry, comes to Nazareth, the place where he was born, where he grew up, and where he was a carpenter. And this is the way Mark describes what happened when the people in Nazareth encountered Jesus. He went out from there. He came to his hometown. His disciples followed him. When the Sabbath came, he began to teach in the synagogue. And the many listeners were astonished, saying, "Where did this man get these things? What is this wisdom that's given to him, and such miracles as these performed by his hands? Is not this the carpenter, the son of Mary, the brother of James and Joseph and Judas and Simeon? Are not his sisters here with us?" And they took offense at him. Jesus said to them, "A prophet is not without honor except in his own hometown and among his own relatives and in his own household. He could do no miracle there except that he laid his hands on a few sick people and healed them, and he wondered at their unbelief. And he was going around the villages and he was teaching." Jesus is rejected. It's not the first time that he's rejected in Nazareth. During the first year of his ministry, in Luke the 4th chapter, you can read about the first time that he was rejected. But this is the second time. So let's think about this rejection in Mark the 6th chapter for just a minute. First, understand, Jesus was probably not rejected as a teacher. And this surprised me as I was thinking about trying to understand what's going on here in the 6th chapter. Jesus is probably not rejected as a teacher. Now, why do I say that? The Jews had their rabbis, and their rabbis tended to have, in many cases, pretty menial jobs. Just let me read off a list of some of them. Rabbi Isaac was a blacksmith. Rabbi Judah was a tailor. Rabbi Jochanan were undertakers. He and Abba Saul were undertakers. Rabbi Simeon was a seller of cotton. Rabbi Nehemiah was they called it a ditcher. I think that means he was a ditch digger. Rabbi Joseph was a skinner. I think that's probably what you do to animals. And one of the most famous rabbis, Rabbi Hillel, was a hewer of wood. He was a guy that worked out in the woods and was in Oregon, we would call him a logger. So they weren't surprised that this teacher had a job. They weren't surprised that he was in the marketplace. In fact, among the Jews, there was a proverb: "He that does not teach his son a trade teaches him to be a thief." Understand, the Jews expected any teacher to have a job. So when they said, "He's just a carpenter," they weren't rejecting him as a teacher. That surprised me, because at first blush, I thought that's what they were doing. But what they were really doing was rejecting him as the Son of God. Because the Son of God would not have a job like this. You know, we've been saying that we are really ordinary people who serve an extraordinary God. And that's what's happening here. They're rejecting Jesus as God, because if he were God, he would not be concerned about mundane things like a job. He would not be concerned about being a carpenter. He would certainly not be concerned about making yokes for oxen. He would be concerned about loftier things than this. Jesus, that wasn't his mission. His mission involved being concerned about mundane things. And we are, as Jesus was, ordinary people who serve an extraordinary God. Now, how does that work out? What does it look like? Well, fortunately, we have some examples that we can refer to. The first example that we're going to be looking at is the Apostle Paul. The Apostle Paul, I'm sure you understand, was a tent maker. And that's a picture of what a tent in the first century that Paul might have worked on probably looked like. In Acts the 18th chapter, at verse 1, we find the Apostle Paul leaving Athens, going to Corinth. And when he got to Corinth, he found a Jew there named Aquila, a native of Pontus, having recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because Claudius had commanded all the Jews to leave Rome. So he comes to this couple, and because he was of the same trade, he stayed with them. They were working side by side because they were tent makers. But just like Jesus did, a carpenter who taught, this tent maker taught in the synagogue every Sabbath, trying to persuade Jews and the Greeks. Now the Apostle Paul makes reference to this in 1 Thessalonians, and in the second chapter there, beginning at verse 9, he says, "You recall, brethren, our labor and hardship, how working night and day, so as not to be a burden to any of you, we proclaim the gospel of God. You are witnesses, and so is God, how devoutly and uprightly and blamelessly we behave toward you believers, just as you know how we were exhorting, encouraging, and imploring each of you as a father would his own children, so that you would walk in a manner worthy of the God who calls you to his own kingdom and glory." Yes, God is great. God is extraordinary. And it's ordinary people who serve him. Tent makers, carpenters, because that's what Jesus did. 1 Corinthians, the 4th chapter, beginning at verse 8, "You're already filled, you've already become rich, you've already become kings without us, and indeed, I wish that you'd become kings so that we might reign with you." I think as God exhibited us apostles last of all, and men condemned to death because we have become a spectacle to the world, both to angels and to men, we're fools for Christ's sake, but you're prudent in Christ. We're weak, but you're strong. You're distinguished, but we're without honor. To this present hour, we were both hungry and thirsty and poorly clothed. We were roughly treated. We're homeless. We toil, working with our own hands. When we're reviled, we bless. When we're persecuted, we endure. When we're slandered, we try to conciliate. When we have become as the scum of the world, the dregs of all things, even until now. So we're going to talk about how that plays out in our lives. We've seen how it played out in the Apostle Paul's life. He was a tent maker. I've never made a tent. My whole life I've never made a tent. But I've had jobs, just like the Apostle Paul had a job, just like Jesus had a job, just like God always expects great things out of ordinary people. So come back tonight, and we'll finish this up, and we'll talk about some really practical things, both practical things for those who are laborers, and practical things for those who are in the position of being managers, and then we'll talk about some practical ideas that relate to how we can share God in the workplace. So come back tonight, and we'll conclude our discussion this evening. It may be that you're a Christian, and you have not lived the way that you ought to live. And you want to return to God. You have been in the workplace and you've laid God aside. And you want to repent of that. And you want to be the kind of Christian you ought to be. You know, James says the effectual fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. And for that reason, he says, confess your faults one to another and pray one to another that you may be healed. We want to help you to be a better Christian. That's just why we come together like this. Maybe that you've never put on Jesus and you don't know how to behave in the workplace. We want to help you find Jesus. We want to help you put him on in baptism, and we'll help you do that today. Just let somebody know. Raise your hand, say something to someone you dismissed. Or you can call somebody at 1 o'clock this afternoon. But let somebody know that we can help. Let's think about it while we stand and we sing this song together.